Okay, good morning, everyone. We'll make a start. This week's parsha is Bahaloscha. It actually is a bit of a continuation of last week. Give me 1 second here. Yep, so last week at the end of the parsha, we read about the Nisim, the leaders of the tribes, donating sacrifices to inaugurate the new Mishkan, which was done the first 12 days of Nisan. Aaron HaKohen, the high priest, missed out on participating. He felt bad, so Hashem at the beginning of the parasha gives him the mitzvah of the menorah, of the candelabra. So just, I'm going to go into another part of the parasha, but just to give a little bit of an overview quickly. So the beginning of the parasha starts with the menorah. Then we have the portion which deals with the preparation of the Levim, the Levites, to serve in the Mishkan. The Torah deals with the formation, the setting of how the Jews traveled in the desert. Also, we have an interesting piece about Chatzotros, about trumpets that they had to make to call the people, to assemble the people. We have the famous portion of Pesach Sheni. It's quite action-packed, this parsha. The second Pesach, the second chance. There's a small part where the Jews are about to go into Eretz Yisrael. Don't forget, this parasha takes place before the story of the spies, where they got knocked with the punishment of spending 40 years in the desert. This was just before. When Moshe Rabbeinu invites his father-in-law to come with to Yisrael, to come with to Eretz Yisrael, who he declines. He goes back to Midian. The famous song that we sing before the Torah is taken out, Vayhi bin Sar Ha'aron, is in this week's parasha. Then we have the portion of the complainers and the whole thing with the quails, the meat, which we're going to talk about in a few moments. And then we have the portion of Lashon Hara, where Miriam and Aaron apparently speak Lashon Hara against Moshe Rabbeinu. They say something a bit negative. And Miriam, who initiated it, is struck with leprosy. And the whole Jewish people have to wait for her for 7 days before they can continue to travel. Now, that's just an overview. Today, what I want to do is I want to explore actually quite a difficult chapter in this parasha, which I don't think I've done before. It's not often talked about. It's quite a difficult parasha. It's difficult because even on the surface, it's a little bit hard to follow exactly what's happening in the different commentaries. I'm going to take the simple reading according to Rashi, but then what I want to do is explore some deep ideas. Now, I hope I get this right because some of the stuff I'm sharing with you is new for me. I decided this year to go into it properly and to try and understand it. But hopefully together we'll go through it and try and understand what the part of the parasha is actually talking about. So in order to do this, I'm going to have to just spend a few minutes. I hope you'll just bear with me. I'm going to spend a few minutes actually looking through the psukim, the verses of that particular portion. So I'm just going to share the screen here. Let's try and do it together. Okay, so it starts over here. It says the complainers and the meat. So it's the beginning of the chapter, chapter 11 in Bamidbar. And it starts off with a story. And according to most commentaries, there are actually two stories that happen here. So 1 and 2, in other words, section 1, which is Pasuk 1 and 2, verse 1 and 2, is one story. Then the story evolves into a second story, which begins in verse Dalet, verse 4. So the first part of the story, which I'm not going to go into so much, but just to give a bit the context here, it says, Vayihi ha'om kemis'onyanim. The people started to complain. According to Mefarshim, they complained about everything, all restrictions, the Torah, the mitzvahs, everything. Rabba ozne Hashem, which was very bad in the eyes of God. Vayishma Hashem, Hashem heard, Vayichar apa, he was angry. Vativar bom eish Hashem, and there was a fire that came from Hashem that started to burn. It started to threaten the existence of the Jewish people. Vatoichel b'kzei ha'machane, consuming the ends of the camp, and it was about to spread. And vayitzak ha'om el Moshe, and the nations cried out to Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayispalel Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu davened el Hashem, to God. Vatishka ha'esh, and the fire died down. Now just an interesting little point, because it's relevant later. No, let me just show you this. I'm just going to highlight one phrase here. It says, Vayihi ha'om, the nation. Generally speaking, when it talks about the nation in the Chumash, it's talking about a particular section of people. It's talking about what we call the Erev Rav. The Erev Rav were a group of people, not really from the Jewish nation, who when the Jews left Egypt, tagged along. They kind of converted, they tagged along. Hashem wasn't that happy with it. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to welcome them into the Jewish people. They tagged along the Jewish nation and they caused lots of different problems throughout the 40 years in the desert. This complaining was initiated by them. It spread to others, but it was initiated by them and resulted in this particular threat. After the fire died down, a new story happens, a new complaining, a new unrest, which was also, according to most commentaries, initiated by them, but here the Torah refers to them with a different term. And let's start Pasuk Dalet. This is section 2 over here. Starting with this one that's highlighted. Says the Torah, Va'safsuf. Now, safsuf is a very hard word to translate. Va'safsuf means the multitude or like the rabblers or like a section of the people, Asher Bekirba, which were in amongst the Jewish people. What happened with them is, and let's read through the psukim, Hisavu ta'avo. They began to have cravings. They wanted something. What do they want? Vayoshuvu vayivku gam b'nei Yisrael, and they enticed the rest of the Jewish people, and then even the children of Israel also began to cry. And the whole Klal Yisrael started to complain. Vayomru, and they said, Mi yachileinu basar. Who is going to feed us meat? We want meat. Why do they want meat? Because we'll soon see. And they started to complain and they said, we want meat. And then they continued and said, Zacharnu es hadogu asher noichal b'mitzrayim chinam. We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt. Chinam, for nothing. Now what does it mean for nothing? Well, nothing was free in Egypt. They were slaves, right? It means free from mitzvahs. We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt without being restricted by any mitzvahs or any restrictions, obligations, impositions, and so on and so forth. So we remember the fish that we ate there. Esa kishuim, the cucumbers, esa avatichim, the watermelons, esa chatzir, the leeks, esa betolim, the onions, esa shumim, and the garlic. Ve'ata nafshenu yevesha, and now, alas, now, our bodies are dried out. Bilti el hamon einenu, there's nothing but the manna, which was coming down from heaven to feed them every day. That's all we have to eat, and that's all. We're going to come back and analyze a lot of this. The next couple of psukim, which maybe we won't do inside, this is number 7, 8, and 9, Zayin Ches and Tes, just describes how the man would fall every day. It had a particular taste, a default taste, but a taste whatever they wanted it to taste, and it fell together with the dew, and every day the Yidden had this miraculous food, which fell from heaven, the manna, the man from heaven. Anyway, they complained, the man is not good enough, all we see is the man, we want meat. We remember the fish and the leeks and the cucumbers and the whole business in Mitzrayim. We want meat. Continues the pasuk. Vayishma Moshe so'am. Boichel mishpachaisa. Moshe Rabbeinu heard the nation crying with their families. Ish lepesach olo. Each one at the entrance to his tent. Vayichar af Hashem. And God was angry. Ve'enu Moshe ra. And Moshe Rabbeinu was upset and he considered it evil. And then Moshe Rabbeinu turns to God and he complains. And he says, Vayomer Moshe Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu said to God, Lama hara'oysa lavdecha, why did you make it so bad for me? Lama nometzasi chayim benecha, why do I not find favor in your eyes? Losumis masa kol ha'am hazeh olai, that you've dumped this load, this burden of this whole nation on me. Am I responsible for them? Ha'anoichi harisi, did I conceive this people, kol ha'am hazeh? Im anoichi ledetiyu, did I give birth to this people? Kiseimer olai, that you should be able to tell me, So'eyu b'cheikecha, carry them in your bosom, kashi yiso'eymen so'einek, like the nurse carries the suckling, al v'adomash anishbatu la'voisov, to the land that you have promised. And then he says something amazing, he says, which we're going to go into later, he says, ma'ayin li basar, where am I going to get meat? L'seizes kol ha'am hazeh, to give this whole nation, ki yifku ala loyma, that they should cry to me, t'rolonu basar v'necheilo, give me meat, and I'm going to eat it. What's Hashem's response? Let's have a look. And again, I hope you're with me. I'm just going through the psukim. It's important to get the whole story before we can explore it. So the pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem l'Moshe." Hashem said to Moshe, "Esfali shivim mizikne Yisrael. gather 70 people from the Jewish people, from the elders, that you know that they are the elders. Just the end of the pasuk, take them to the Mishkan, let them stand next to you. And Hashem says, essentially what this all was, Hashem says, I'm going to give the meat through them, which means I'm going to take some of the Kedusha, some of the prophecy, some of the holiness that's on you, and I'm going to transfer it to them. You will give from the spirit that's on you to them. They will be like your support, your intermediary sort of between you and the nation. And then I will give them meat. And then Hashem says and threatens them, I'll give lots of meat. It'll not be one day, it'll not be 2 days, it'll be a whole month. And you'll have so much meat that the nation will start to complain and it'll go out of there, it'll become sick of it and it'll be terrible. In other words, Hashem said, I'm going to give so much meat, but it's going to be bad for them and that'll be a form of punishment. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says a very interesting thing. He says, listen to this in Chof Aleph in 21. Vayoymer, he says, Vayoymer Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Sheish meyois elef ragli ha'om asher anoichi bekirbay. There are 600 people here on foot that I am amongst them. Ve'ato amarto boser etelam. And you say you're going to give them meat. Ve'ochlu chodesh yomim. And they're going to eat meat for a whole month. Tell me, says Moshe Rabbeinu, atzoynu vokar yishochet lohem. You think if we shechted all, if we slaughtered all the cattle and sheep here, it would be enough for them? Umotzalem is called the guy Yomi Oselem, Motzalem, if we gave them all the fish in the sea, it would be enough for them? To which Hashem responds, that was a strange question. Hashem says, Vayomer Hashem l'Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hayad Hashem tiktzar. Do you think the power of Hashem is limited? Atosiro, you're going to see now, Hayikrcha dvari imlo, if my word comes true or not. That's the story. Now, before we look into the whole thing, I want to just touch on two specific things of the story. First, let's go back to the beginning. In this specific part of the story, Hashem refers to this group that started this new thing of craving for meat, and he says Vasafsuf. He calls them the Asafsuf. Very strange terminology. Not Ha'om, the nation, like in the previous pasuk, but Vasafsuf. What's this concept of Asafsuf? So I want to just share with you a very interesting concept coming from a sefer called Or Pnei Moshe, where he makes reference. He says Vasafsuf. Oh, that wasn't very good. 1 second. Right. Vasafsuf, he says, is made up of two parts. There's the first three letters, Vav, He, Aleph, Vah, and Safsuf. Now, the word Safsuf, listen to this carefully, the word Safsuf has the gematria of par, a cow, a reference to what went wrong in the Jewish nation, the impurity that was amongst the Jewish people, which came as a result of the Egel Hazov, the sin of the golden calf. That impurity actually already started from the war of Amalek, where Amalek came part of the Amalek attacked the Jewish people, and the evilness of Amalek was amongst the Jewish nation. What was wrong with the Jewish nation ever since Amalek, and especially since Safsuf, since the Egel Hazov, the golden calf? So let me take you to a pasuk where it talks about Amalek. Here we are. In Parshas Beshalach, this pasuk here on the document, it says, Vayoymer, Hashem said, after the war of Amalek, Hashem introduced the mitzvah that ultimately Amalek would have to be destroyed, which we now know that Shaul HaMelech tried to destroy Amalek. Purim's story was to do with Amalek, and actually Amalek was never properly destroyed and will only be destroyed when Mashiach comes, which is not only a reference to the physical Amalek, but it's also a reference to the spiritual Amalek. And Hashem said an interesting thing. Vayoymer Hashem said, Ki Yod al Kais Ko. Ki Yod means I'm placing a hand on the throne of God. The word case over here means like kisei, the chair. Ka Yud and He is Hashem's name. Hashem sort of swore, Milchama la Hashem, that this is a war, a godly war, by Amalek against Amalek, midor dor, for all generations. Now, take note that when it talks about Hashem's throne, it uses the word case, not kisei. It's missing an Aleph. When you use the name of Hashem, normally in the Torah, it's Yud and He and Vav and He, right? Over here, it's just Yud and He. So Rashi over there in Parshas Beshalach comments and he says that Ein Hakisei Sholev, that God's throne will not be complete, God's name will not be complete until Amalek is destroyed. So Amalek attacks the Jewishness. He attacks the godliness, the spirituality of the Jewish people. He makes God's presence, symbolized by his throne, God's manifestation, God's revelation, symbolized by his name, incomplete until he's destroyed. So what's missing? The Aleph from Kisei and the Yud, and the Vav and the Hey from Hashem's name. Go back to the beginning now. Who started this complaint? V'asafsuf. Asafsuf. Safsuf is the gematria of the golden calf, the cow, par. Ever since then, when there's impurity amongst the Jewish nation, what's missing? Vav, hey, aleph. The aleph from Hashem's name, Hashem's throne, sorry. The vav and hey from his name. Those three words, aleph, vav, and hey, which is why it's called Vohar Safsuf. It's Vav Hey Aleph is missing because of the Safsuf, because of the sin of the golden calf, where impurity remained among the Jewish nation. You see, had it all been because of Amalek, that would have been finished at Matan Torah. Because Amalek attacked the Jewish people before the giving of the Torah. When the Torah was given, all impurity was erased from the world. However, it returned with the golden calf. So therefore, the fact that we have today, that Hashem's name is incomplete, Hashem's throne is incomplete, it originates from Amalek, but it's a result of the Egel Azov of the golden calf, the Safsuf, the par, the cow. What's missing? Aleph, Vav, and Hey. Which there's a pasuk which we say in Davening, that Hashem desires to once again rest completely among the Jewish nation. And there's a pasuk, and I forgot to copy it, but it says, Iva lemoishav loy. Hashem desired, Iva. He desires, that's the word taiva, means to desire, to have lust. There's good desires and bad desires. Hashem's taiva, Hashem's desire, iva, which is the root of taiva, iva, he desires, aleph vav hey, he desires to dwell among us. Because when Mashiach will come, Hashem's desire will be completely realized and will have back the iva, the want, the desire. But the aleph vav hey, the aleph will return to kisei, to Hashem's throne, the vav and the hey will return to Hashem's name. However, what happened over here was the opposite. They strengthened the fact that the Eva was missing, the Aleph Vav Hey was missing, because of bad taiva, because of bad desires. They wanted meat, they wanted to eat more. And as we see later in the Parsha, that extrapolated to other desires, because it says in the Mefarshim that they started to desire promiscuous behavior, inappropriate, immoral behavior, and so on and so forth. So they channeled their desire in the wrong way. What we need to do is, the lesson, of course, is for us to work on our desires, to want that our desires should be towards God, that we should want to serve Hashem, because if we want to serve Hashem, we limit and we minimize the impurity in the world to then bring about the time where Hashem will want to dwell in us. It will be evil, the Moishav Loi, Hashem will want to desire amongst us, and we'll have back the Aleph and the Vav and the Hey. I hope everyone followed that. It's hard to tell because I'm not sitting around the table with you, but I hope that was good. Okay, let's go to the next thing. Just another detail, and then we're going to go into the whole story. A very strange thing here. This is, I'm sharing with you something now from the Kedushas Levi, Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Abarditchev. And he says the following. He asks the following question. The Jewish people asked, we want meat. Want meat? And what do they say? We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt. Then it says, remember the cucumbers and the watermelons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. Now, the truth is, those five things actually make sense. Because the Mefarshim explain that actually these five things, apparently, the mon tasted like any food you wanted it to taste. However, it did not have the taste of these five things, cucumbers, watermelons, leeks, onions, and garlic, because apparently they would be, at least in those times, it was detrimental for nursing women. Right? And therefore didn't have the taste of these five things, which, by the way, just to digress for a moment, there's a very interesting minhag that people eat on Shabbos, and many people have a minhag to eat on Shabbos, what we call ayah mitzibala, which is egg and onion. egg salad with onion. The reason is because it has onion, and one of the ideas of Shabbos is that Shabbos symbolizes the mon, which is why we have double challah on Friday night, because a double portion of mon fell on Shabbos in honor. It fell on Friday in honor of Shabbos. Shabbos gave the bracha to the mon for the whole week, as we know, and therefore we complete the mon, so to speak, by eating onions on Shabbos. That's one of the reasons we eat. I don't know. There's no minhag in eating the watermelons and all that stuff, but onions, for some reason, remain with us with this minhag, right? Okay, so then they're complaining that we remember the watermelons and the leeks and the onions because now we don't have it because we can't even taste it in the mud. But what on earth were they saying by we remember the fish? We remember the fish that we ate in Mitzrayim. They didn't ask for fish. They asked for meat. So why we remember the fish? So Levi Yitzchak Baditchev says a very beautiful thing, a very cute thing. He said like this. We know that the man had all the tastes that you wanted. If you wanted the man to taste like something, it tasted like it. However, apparently the man only had a taste of something that you recognized the taste. In other words, you had eaten it before you came out of Egypt, you had eaten it. You know what it tastes like, and you want the man to taste like it, it would taste like it, right? Now he says, interesting thing, he says that the Yidden at Matan Torah were given a new mitzvah, the mitzvah to eat meat only if you shecht it and you kasher it. So now, after Matan Torah, the only meat they were permitted to eat was kosher meat, right? Kosher meat needs to be shechted, needs to be kashered, the blood needs to come out, and so on and so forth. So he says that kosher meat, I guess especially if you're a little bit more spiritually sensitive as they were, kosher meat has a different taste to non-kosher meat. I mean, there could be some physical aspect of that also, because you take out the blood and you put more salt, kosher meat's more salty, whatever the case is. But he says that kosher meat that's shechted and kashered properly has a different taste to non-kosher meat. Now, the problem is that in Mitzrayim, they didn't eat kosher meat. In Mitzrayim, they were assimilated. In Mitzrayim, they just ate regular meat. Now, they had to eat kosher meat. So this was their complaint, says Levi Yitzchak Baditchev. They wanted meat. The problem is that the meat that they wanted, they didn't have no idea what it tastes like. But they knew that it tastes different. So this is how the pasuk goes. They cried and they said, Mi achileinu basar, who is going to feed us meat? And then they continue. Fish is not a problem because zacharnu esadoga shenayichul Mitzrayim chinam. The fish is the same fish that we remember from Egypt. That we remember the taste. That's not a problem. We know the taste of fish, which is why we can eat fish now, because we can just wish the man to be taste like fish, and it will taste like fish. But meat is different. Meat, we don't know the taste because it's different meat now. And therefore, we're complaining about the meat. That's how he explains it, the connection between the meat and the fish. And then they complain that there's some things which you do remember from Egypt, which you can't even have now because the man doesn't have that taste. Okay, so that's just two beautiful things. One from that commentary and the other one from the Rav Yitzchak Baditchev. However, I wanted to have a look at the general parasha, this general concept. And I'll just stop the sharing and let me go back to everyone here and let me just pose a couple of questions. It's all very nice, the Vorta of Yitzchak Baditchev, they wanted meat because they knew what fish tastes like, but this is meat, it's extra. Okay. But why the obsession with meat? What do they want meat for? Second of all, Moshe Rabbeinu says a very strange thing. Moshe Rabbeinu says that there won't be enough meat for them. And then when Hashem says he hasn't got enough meat for them. Then when Hashem says he's going to bring meat to them, he says, what do you mean? 600,000 people, there's never going to be enough meat for them. And Hashem says, what? You don't trust Hashem's Hashem is limited? What was Moshe Rabbeinu thinking? In other words, of course Hashem feeds billions of people on earth. There's enough food for everyone to go around if we just resource it properly. Right? And Hashem brought 10 plagues and split the Red Sea and gave the Torah at Har Sinai. So he won't be able to give meat to 3 million people? What was Moshe Rabbeinu's question? What did he mean? Ma'ayin li basa, where do I have meat? What does he mean that there's never going to be meat for this people? What does he mean by that? That's a very, very strong question. So first of all, we have to understand what is the obsession with meat they had in the first place? And second of all, why did Moshe Rabbeinu entertain the concept that Hashem wouldn't have enough meat for them? And thirdly, what actually happened at the end of the story? At the end of the story, Hashem sent meat, but it was in the form of slav. Slavis, it's normally translated as quails. I'm not sure exactly what kind of bird it is. It's kind of a very, very fatty bird, apparently. It's meat that they had with, which is very, very fatty. Why did Hashem respond? If Hashem can make a miracle, and Hashem can bring any form of meat, why did Hashem choose specifically the form of meat in the form of slav? So I want to share with you something which is very deep, and I hope I'm going to make it clear. But I want to just give an introduction, something that the Shemi Shmuel, the Sochachov Rebbe, says on this parasha, because he explains it a bit of a different way, but also he gives a deep explanation on the whole thing, which I'm not going to share with you just now because I don't want to run out of time. But he does say a very important thing. He says, and this is true with lots of stories, you know, there are many, many stories, and we know the Torah has many layers, right? So, like, I'll give you an example. Like, in the past, I've explained to you many aspects of the story of Korach, the rebellion of Korach, which, if you read the Chumash, on the surface, it was just a jealous bunch who steeped into a very low level of jealousy, division, disunity, created a big politics and a machlokes, and they were severely punished by Hashem for descending by being swallowed up by the ground. That's the simple reading of the pasuk. But we've also explained in the past very deep ideas that Korach wasn't such a big fool. Korach understood deep secrets of the Torah. Korach had an approach. It was a holy approach. It was a legitimate approach. But it was a flawed approach, and it was something wrong, and therefore it wasn't right on their level. So which one is true? What actually happened? The deeper story or the simple story? The deeper story, which is much more virtuous and much more spiritual, or the simple story, which is a bunch of guys, gangsters, who just created a big machlokes? So the Sochachov explains that both are true. Very often what happens is something starts holy. It starts right, right? It starts right, but it could very quickly derail into something really wrong. Korach, even the story of Korach, it started right, but it derailed very quickly because it wasn't 100% right. It derailed into something very, very bad. And this is a really interesting thing, because sometimes we want things in life which are l'shem shemayim. We want them in a good way. We want them in a way which could be used for the service of Hashem. But if it's not 1,000% pure, it can very quickly derail into something really evil. And that's what happened in the story of Korach, and we'll see that happen over here also. What actually happened here was a really interesting story, and we're going to go through it in a second. But it doesn't contradict the simple story that it derailed into a story of real lust, of just wanting to eat meat in a very coarse and materialistic way. And the response of Hashem was he gave them so much meat that actually what happened in the story was they ate lots of meat and they got sick, and a lot of them died and actually were punished for this whole story. But let's go back to our questions. Why the obsession with meat in the first place? How could Moshe Rabbeinu question Hashem's ability and his own ability to provide the meat? And why was the meat in the form of slav of quails? So, I'm going to share with you an idea. It comes from Likutei Torah. Likutei Torah are essays from the first Chabad Rebbe, Rav Shnei Zalman of Ladi. Very Kabbalistic and deep. And he gives a whole insight into the story. But to understand it on this deeper level, we need to explore. We'll come back, so bear with me here. We need to explore, and something we've touched on in the past in different ways, but we can explore it on a deep level now. The relationship between human beings, or Jewish people specifically, and food, from a spiritual perspective. Now I'm talking about the relationship that we have between us and eating and food, but really it's true with our relationship with anything physical, but let's focus on the concept of food. From a spiritual perspective, Chazal, the Gemara says a very strange line. And the line that it says is, Am ha'aretz osur lechol basar. An ignoramus. Now, when it says ignoramus, it's not just talking about someone who's not a big scholar. It means someone who's on a very low level, who lacks Torah direction, or lacks Torah values, or lacks Torah information and insight. It's forbidden for such a person to eat meat. Now, we know the Torah allows us to eat meat. There are certain times of the year where the Torah even encourages eating meat. Shabbos, Yom Tov particularly, and so on and so forth. But the Talmud says that Am Ha'aretz, an ignoramus, a person who's on a much lower level, it's forbidden for him to eat meat. Why would it be forbidden for that person to eat meat? So again, let's go through the relationship between ourselves and food. So in Kabbalah it explains like this. That we have an interesting relationship with food. Now don't forget that the world is divided into four parts. Doimim, Tzomeach, Chai, and Medaber. The inanimate objects like the dust and the minerals and the rocks and the mountains. The vegetation, things that grow. Chai, the animal kingdom, and us. Vegetation grows, the Tzomeach grows in Doimim. Tzomeach grows in the inanimate, it grows in the ground. Those two things come together. Then there's the animal kingdom, and then there's us. What we find with food is like this, that the highest form of creation is the person. Medaber, the human being, is the higher of the four. Yet, we know there's a great strength that is in food that's not found within the human being. The greatest proof of that is that a human being cannot exist without food. In other words, the person, when the person eats, the person is receiving from the food, right? The person receiving from the food. Now, this is many ways. First one, a very, very physical way. It says that a person is nizon mahamaychal, a person is sustained by eating. So we receive sustenance, we receive life energy from food. Second of all, we know that food has more intellectual and spiritual benefits. We have this concept of, the Gemara tells us, Ein ha-tinok yordea likrais abo achayitom tam dogon. A child doesn't know how to recognize and acknowledge and call his father's name until he has eaten solids, until he has eaten grain. That's what the Talmud says. It's as a result of a child starting to eat solids is that the child develops the potential for language, develops the maturity on a very childlike level, at least some level of maturity, to understand that his father or his mother are his parents and be able to call them daddy, mommy, tati, mommy, whatever the case is. Right? And then we find even spiritual things. We find a fascinating Gemara. The Gemara says, Rav Nachman says that he was asked a certain deep concept, Talmudic idea at night, and he didn't say it. He only related the next day. The next day he gave the explanation. And then he said, you're probably wondering why I did not share with you this explanation last night. The reason is because I didn't have my meal. And my meal is bistro de tura, fat meat, good meat. Because he says that adloy achilno bistro de tura, until Rav Nachman would not eat, unless he would eat a good steak, he's only when he ate a good piece of meat, his mind was broadened and able to understand Torah in a greater, deeper, and clearer way. And that's when he would give his best shear, so to speak. So that's, I guess it has different effects on different people. I don't eat a good steak before a shear because then I fall asleep. But Rav Nachman was a much greater level, so therefore that's why. So he was able to receive that from the food, that the good steak in Rav Nachman's case actually broadened his mind and made it possible for him to give that really good Torah insight in a very deep and clear way. So here are some examples of how people, even though we're on the top of the rung of the ladder of creation, we doimim tzomeach chai medaber, we are on top. Nevertheless, by eating food, we actually receive from the food sustenance, intellectual development, and even spiritual and Talmudic development. On the one hand. On the other hand, we know the opposite is that when we eat food, the function of eating food spiritually, Kabbalistically, is for us to elevate the food to a higher level. When we eat food, we talk about in Kabbalah the nitzutzes, the sparks, the divine sparks which are found within the food, which we, when we eat them for the right reason and we eat it properly, we're able to release the food, those sparks from being captured, and we elevate the food, and the food is then elevated to a higher, holier, and more spiritual level. Which, by the way, explains the Talmudic saying we said before, that Am Ha'aretz Asur Lechol Basar, that Am Ha'aretz, someone who's on a low spiritual level, is not permitted to eat meat. Because if a person who's not on a good level will eat meat, they won't be able to elevate the meat. If you're not able to elevate the meat, you shouldn't eat it. Now, we'll see why meat in particular in a second, right? I'm just giving you an example that there's a two opposite thing here. On the one hand, we receive from the meat, from the food. We are the mekabel, we are on the receiving end from the food. On the other hand, we give to the food by elevating it and bringing it up to a higher level. How does that work? How does those two opposite things work? So very bekitzur, very, very briefly, it works like this. Everything in the world has a spiritual source, right? In Kabbalah, we talk, the way Hashem created the world is He created what we call Seder Hishtalshlus. He created a chain, an evolution of spiritual worlds, spiritual levels, divine worlds, divine levels, and so on and so forth. And from those entities, from those angels, from those spiritual worlds, from those spiritual levels, evolves the physical world. Just to give you an example, on the first day of Shavuot, we learned in Haftarah, we have the famous vision of Ezekiel, of Yechezkel, called the Merkava, the celestial vision, the celestial chariot, where Yechezkel in great detail explains and describes the heavenly chariot that he saw. And he said he saw different types of angels. Ones were like oxen, the other were like an eagle, the other one were like lions, and so on and so forth. And in Kabbalah, it's explained that what he saw was, obviously he didn't see an ox in heaven, he didn't see a lion, he didn't see all these animals in heaven. What he did see was, he saw the spiritual ox, the spiritual eagle, the spiritual lion. In other words, he saw not the lion, but he saw the source, the divine origin of the lion, the spiritual origin of the lion. He saw the spiritual origin of the ox, and so on and so forth. Everything that exists in this world is rooted in one of the levels, in one of the sfirot, in the chesed, in the gvura, in the angels, in the world, whatever, that has multiple divine origins in the spiritual, divine, sublime, pure worlds. Now, we also have a principle that sometimes things which have an extremely high origin, things that have an incredibly deep and spiritual source, fall lower. The higher something is, the lower it can reach. And therefore, sometimes when we find things in this world which actually are on a lower level, it actually means that it could be rooted in a higher level in the divine origin of where these things come from. Now, it's beyond the scope of the shiur to explain exactly how this works, but suffice to say that particularly when it comes to food and generally in the physical world, right, there's a divine energy, there's a divine source in the food which is rooted higher than the source of the human being. In other words, the fact that this food is lower actually means that its divine energy, its divine source is higher. Okay? What does that mean? It means like this. That these sparks, these divine sparks that Kabbalah talks about, that are hidden within food, actually come from a very high source. Because they come from such a high source, that's why when they fall so low, they fall in a concealed way, in a captured way. In other words, the food is on a lower level, which is why the energy, the sparks that it has within it, cannot be revealed. It's hidden there. It's like in prison there. Picture it like a very, very high ranking officer that's stuck in a dungeon, has no expression. It's there. Even when that officer, that minister is somehow captured within the enemy's dungeon, he's still a minister, he's still a great person, he's still an intellectual, but he has no expression. There's no one to talk to, there's no one to share his wisdom with, there's no one to relate to, there's no one to be manifested to. Right? That's the story with the sparks that are in the food. The sparks, the nitzutzot, these divine sparks which are found within food, come from a higher source than the human being, but they have no expression. Because they have fallen into a lower form of existence, they're what we call in Kabbalah the captured sparks. The sparks are higher, they come from a higher source, but they're captured and they don't have expression. Therefore, they don't have any effect on the food. They don't have any effect to make the food a higher being, because the food is a lower being. And therefore, the sparks are there, it comes from a higher source, but they have no expression. I hope that's clear. Which explains the dual relationship that we have with food. On the one hand, we receive from the food. Food makes us higher. It gives us sustenance, gives us intellectual maturity, and it gives us spiritual broadness. Why? Because when we eat food, we are tapping into something which we don't have on our own. We're tapping into something that comes from a higher level, and therefore we receive from the food. At the same time, however, we are elevating the food, because by eating it with the right reason, by making a bracha beforehand, by eating it for the purpose of serving Hashem properly, by eating without indulgence, and so on and so on and so forth, we elevate the food, we are releasing those sparks, and therefore the food is elevated to its original level and it comes to a higher source. Both things are true and both things happen at the same time. But here's the catch. The catch is, this only happens if we do it with the right purpose. In other words, when do we receive from the food properly? Or when do we elevate the food? In other words, when we elevate the food, then we're able to tap into the benefit of the power of those powerful sparks. When does it happen? Only if we eat it with the right spiritual perspective. When we eat food properly, when we, to use the classic terminology of Hasidut and Kabbalah, when we mevare, when we refine the food, in other words, when we eat with focus, when we eat with, if you call it spiritual mindfulness, when we make a bracha, we know what we're eating, we know where the food comes from, we eat for the right reasons and it's kosher, and we make, and we eat not too much, we don't overindulge, and we eat in a healthy way, and so on and so on and so forth, and we eat for a mitzvah, etc. That's when we tap into this amazing energy. And that's when the energy helps us and at the same time is released and elevates the food. Which is why Rav Nachman could eat a steak and he was able to learn Torah. Because Rav Nachman didn't eat a steak because he liked a bit of meat. He ate it for the right reason. He ate it to tap into that powerful energy so it would give him the power to learn better. That's how it works. But if we eat for the wrong reason, if we eat just for taiva, just for lust, just for indulgence, just to have a good time, just to be coarse and materialistic, not only don't we receive the spiritual benefit, not only don't we elevate the food, but the food drags us down. The food in its present state, which is a lower form of material existence, that food draws us down and we become lower and we become more connected to a lower form of existence. That's how the whole thing works in general. Incidentally, just digress for a moment, something I mentioned before. That's what the Baal Shem Tov says, that when a person is hungry, it's really the neshama being hungry. Because the neshama is yearning and wants to connect to that special, strong, powerful spark that's within the food. And therefore the soul, however, cannot eat. The soul has to activate a physical hunger. But it's based on a pasuk where the pasuk says, Re'evim gam tzemeim, when people are hungry, nafshom bohem tis'atof, it's the soul that's embedded in the hunger. Why? Because the soul wants to connect to that spiritual energy, and therefore activates a physical hunger. After that, it's over to us, and we need to make the choice. Are we going to do it soulfully? Are we going to eat in accordance with the soul? Or are we going to let it drag us down and eat materialistically? Okay, so that's generally how this concept works. Now, in a very specific way, however, it depends what food we eat, which goes back to this Talmudic dictum of Am Ha'aretz, the lower person may not eat meat. Why? See, we have to understand, we have to explain something, another concept. Different foods have different spiritual origins that relate to the Sfirot, to the tools that Hashem used to create the world with. And they relate to how they are in their spiritual form. So we know, for example, there's chesed and there's gevura, right? So certain foods are related to chesed. Certain, like water, bread to a certain degree. Chesed is a powerful sphere. It's the sphere of love, of generosity, of giving. You can have good gevura, bad gevura, as we talked about many, many times. And this is some foods are connected to chesed. Some foods are connected to gevura. For example, meat. Meat is connected to gevura. Right? That's why meat is red. The color of gevura is red. Now, gevura is harder to elevate. Now, let's just explain. This is a really important part of this explanation. Gevura is harder to channel. Although when channeled, it's better than chesed. Let me explain. Chesed is a power of giving. It's a power of connection. It's a power of love. It's a calm power. That's why the colors of chesed are more white and compassion and sort of easygoing. Like milk is chesed, for example, right? And calm. Now, you can have bad chesed. Bad chesed is indulgence. It's bad love, inappropriate love, but you can channel that. Love essentially is a good thing. Generosity is a good thing. Connection is a good thing. You channel it to good connection, good love, and so on and so forth. Gevura, on the other hand, Gevurah is different. Gevurah represents a raging strength, which is much, that's why it's fire. It's like red, it's fire, it's fiery. It's a fiery, passionate, explosive energy. That's what Gevurah is. Which is why it says it's called Gevurah. Gevurah means strength. And it's also why Gevurah can, you can have good Gevurah and bad Gevurah. But Gevurah lends itself often to aggression, to negativity, to destruction, to a negative energy, a negative context. Very easy for that to happen. On the other hand, when a person can take the energy of Gevurah and elevate it, channel it, refine it, the benefits are unbelievable. The benefits are much greater than that of Chesed. A person can then internalize an unbelievable, fiery, raging love for God, a raging passion for Torah and mitzvahs, much greater than found in Chesed, much greater than found in the power of Chesed. Chesed brings you good connections, a spirit of generosity, but that amazing strength of passion, or the amazing strength of discipline to do whatever Hashem wants us to do, which takes incredible strength sometimes to overcome obstacles, to overcome adversity, that's found in Gevurah. That's strengthened by Gevurah, which is why in Rosh Hashanah, we've had this concept before, we focus on the shofar comes from Yitzchak is Gevurah, the honey comes from a bee, which is Gevurah. Why? Because we know that transformed Gevurah brings greater blessing than pure chesed. Which is why, by the way, the ultimate blessing, the blessing of rain, is called in the Gemara, Gevurah is Kshamim. The strength of rain, because when we have rain, that's the ultimate blessing of sustenance. It's called Gevurah because, for many reasons, but one of them is because it comes from a very great source. It comes from Hashem's strength. It's one of the powers of Hashem, the giving of rain, and therefore it's channeled Gevurah. So Gevurah is a difficult thing to channel, but when you channel it, the power is unbelievable. That's why the Gemara says the Amoretz, the ignoramus, the person who's on a lower level, shouldn't eat meat. What does that mean, shouldn't eat meat? Because we eat properly to channel and to tap into the spiritual energy that's in the food. But if we don't know how to channel Gevurah, better to stay with the more the safe foods. Better to stay, spiritually speaking, better to stay with the foods that are more safe, like water, like bread, like vegetables, and so on and so forth. But if you're going to eat meat, says the Gemara, meat is Gevurah. You're eating properly, you want to tap into the spiritual energy? That's a dangerous territory. The dangerous territory is Gevurah. And you need to have the tools to do that. You need to have the wisdom, Talmud Chacham, you need to have the Torah insight to be able to really do that, to be able to really channel the Gevurah into that fiery connection with Hashem, that passion of love of Hashem, that discipline to serve Hashem, and so on and so forth. So that's the beginning of the story that we read in the Parsha. The Jewish people come to Hashem and they say, we want to eat meat. Man, as the Sochet Shav actually says this, the man was white. The one represented Chesed. The manna was Chesed. We want Gevurah. We want to eat meat. The initial claim of the Jewish people before it derailed into some sort of indulgent desire, the initial claim was to eat meat to channel the Gevurah. They wanted meat because meat, the spiritual energy in meat, is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. That's why they wanted meat. It's part one. Part two comes along Moshe Rabbeinu and he says, Me'ayin li basar. Where am I going to get the meat from? Now, what is that supposed to mean? So Likutei Torah explains the following. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I understand what they want. They want to channel the energy not only in the chesed, but in the gevurah. They don't only want to get the energy out of the chesed, which will be love in a calmer way, generosity in a calmer way, connection in a calmer way. But they want Gevurah, they want to tap into the spiritual energy of this passionate love for Hashem. Good, I get that. But what's that got to do with me? I don't know how to do that. Why? So this is what explains in Kabbalah, many Mefarshim explain this, and the Kutat Torah expands on this. He says, because Moshe Rabbeinu's world was not chesed or Gevurah. They both weren't in his world. He was much, much higher than that. What was Moshe Rabbeinu? You see, Chesed and Gevurah are from the world of emotion. Emotion means that there's a feeling, a strong feeling. And when it comes to a loving Hashem, it's what we call in Kabbalah, Yesh Misha Oyev. there's something that exists that loves something else. Meaning, it might be a fiery love towards Hashem, but it's not the total bond with Hashem. The total bond with Hashem is not love. Love is when someone exists and he loves or she loves someone or something else. Two separate entities. Moshe Rabbeinu's level was what it calls in Kabbalah, Chochma Ilah. Chochma Ilah means the supernal Chochma. The supernal level of all these spiritual worlds, the highest level within all these spiritual worlds, which is one with Hashem. I don't need Gevurah, I don't need Chesed. Moshe Rabbeinu transcends food, which is why he was able, perhaps on the 40 days of the desert, to go through 40 days and 40 nights without eating any food. Because Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't need the energy within food. He doesn't need to refine the food. Moshe Rabbeinu's level is one of total oneness with Hashem. Total oneness, it's a supernal level. The food, by the way, that represents Moshe Rabbeinu's level is oil, shemen. In Kabbalah, oil, and bear this in mind because it's going to be relevant in a few minutes, oil is called Chochma, not Bina, but Chochma. Because Chochma is this highest level. It's the one, which is the level which is one with Hashem. Chochma is like oil. Chochma is like transcends. It's the level of transcendence. Just like oil that transcends all other foods. It cannot mix with anything. It cannot mix with any liquid. It stays on top. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's level was, I'm way beyond this. I don't know how to teach them. I don't know how to bring them food. I don't know how to bring them meat, for sure not. Such a coarse thing, such a materialistic thing. I understand they want to refine it. I understand they want to have the spiritual energy. But it's all in the world where there's something that exists outside of Hashem's reality that wants to then become closer to Hashem. And it'll be what they call in Kabbalah, Yesh Misha Oyev. There'll be still an entity which is separate to Hashem, which will love Hashem, yes, with a passionate way, with a fiery way, with amazing everything. But still separate from Hashem. I don't know how to do that. Ma'ayinli basa, where am I going to find meat? Not that he was questioning God's ability to give meat. But atzoinu vaker yishachet, even if the meat is shechted for them, even if you find them the meat, but I can't do that. And Hashem is a little bit upset. Why? Because Hashem says, Hayad Hashem tiktzar. Are you limiting the ability of Hashem? Now what does that mean in this context? If Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't questioning Hashem, he was just saying, I don't know how to connect to such a world. I'm in a transcendent world. How am I going to connect? Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, why are you questioning the ability to do that? That's what your job is as a leader. That's what you need to do. You need to take your level. Listen carefully to this punchline now. You need to take your level of oneness with Hashem and inspire the people on their level to develop within their context, within their framework, within their paradigm. They need to be able to bring that spirit of oneness that you have and serve Hashem as they are, with the chesed and the gevura, but as much as they can to bond and unite with Hashem, taking from your level. That's your mission statement. That's your job. That's the connection between the people and their leader. They will never reach his level, but they need to take from his level. They need to be able to take from the level of shemen, the level of oil, and bring it down to that level. Do you question the ability of Hashem to combine the two levels? Do you think that you only have to be a Moshe Rabbeinu to reach a oneness of Hashem? How about the Jews in their context, in their world of chesed and gevura? You think they cannot absorb some of that oneness? You think they cannot absorb with their fiery love, reach a level where they don't feel separate? They feel passionate, they feel fiery, but they feel one with God. They can reach a level of oneness with God which needs to come from you. And needs to come from your world, but your world cannot remain separate. Your world needs to travel down to them. So get me the 70 elders. I'll give some of your spirit to them. They will give it on to the Jewish people. You need to be able to create a flow of connection. That's what Hashem was upset with Moshe Rabbeinu. And the truth is, Hashem demonstrated that by giving them wheat. Meat. Which meat? Listen to this. This is what the Torah explains. He gave them the meat of the slav, the quails. Apparently the quails is an incredibly fatty meat. It's fatty meat, and the fat represents the oil. Because in Kabbalah it says that we find two things with oil. On the one hand, oil doesn't mix with anything else. On the other hand, it permeates everything. If you spill oil, it gets into everything. If you pour oil on food, it goes everywhere. As the Gemara says, Shemen mefafeo bekula, it just goes everywhere. It's hard to get off even. An oil spill is a terrible thing because it just goes everywhere. It makes everything greasy. The slav, more than any other meat, the slav, the quails, was a very, very fatty bird. An incredibly fatty bird. And that fat made the meat very fatty. A demonstration to Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what's supposed to happen. The fat represents the oil. Yes, the oil is separate from all liquids, but the oil can permeate, can make the meat greasy. Your level can flow to the level of the people. Your level can flow to Am Yisrael, it can flow to the world of meat. You don't have to remain transcendent. The ability of Hashem is that you can have a Moshe Rabbeinu and a people, Moshe Rabbeinu who's in the world of oil, the people in the world of meat, good meat, in channeling the meat, but yet the two worlds can connect. The shemen, the fat, the chaylev can permeate, can travel through, and can affect the meat as well. And that's what Hashem's response was, and that's where the quail was given. Unfortunately, the story evolved into, like we said before, into regular indulgence. It didn't end well, but the lesson is still there. And the lessons we take out of the story are a number of things. First of all, both from Moshe Rabbeinu, you see, because the Torah records Moshe Rabbeinu's question, and it also gives Hashem's answer. The lesson is like this. First of all, the lesson is how we approach the whole concept of eating in general. What's our purpose in connecting with the physical experience of eating? Each one on our level, we have to try a little bit. Eat with a focus. Eat in order to tap into the spiritual energy, tap into the power. We need to understand the channeling of chesed and gvura. That chesed is one thing to channel, but when you eat meat, it's even more. We eat meat on Yom Tov or Shabbos. It's about channeling into that passion, that fiery love that we have to Hashem. We also have to know that there are people who are on a different level altogether. And the question has to be asked. Moshe Rabbeinu's question is an eternal question. Because we need to have models of things which we can look up to, which are way beyond our world, to the point where the question is raised, Ma'ayin li bosa, what connection do they have to us? And yet Hashem has given us a system that we do have a connection. Because one of the systems that we have from Moshe Rabbeinu onwards, where when the Jews left Egypt and they said, Vayaminu b'Hashem u'b'Moshe Avdoi, they believed in Hashem and Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, the concept that Hashem gave us, those people in every generation who are great, who are on a greater level, the tzaddikim of every generation. And one of the processes of connection to Hashem is to connect to the tzaddikim. The emunah tzaddikim, believing in tzaddikim, connecting to tzaddikim, learning from tzaddikim, aspiring to their level and then absorbing a little bit of their level, that's Hashem's response. That's what Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu. Yes, you're right. You're in a completely different level, but to the point where there's a question like, how can you connect to them? But at the same time, that's exactly what has to take place. Because when we connect with tzaddikim, when we connect to people on much greater levels than we are, somehow we can elevate ourselves even more than the meat and the fish and the chesed and the gvura, and get a little bit of that oneness that they have into our world, that in our own context, within our struggles, we can start to taste and we can start to experience a little bit of that oneness between us and Hashem. So that's just a deeper understanding of this perek, of this chapter, of this week's parsha, the story of the quail, the story of the slav, why they wanted meat, what Moshe Rabbeinu's problem is, and what Hashem's answer to Moshe Rabbeinu was. I hope that was clear, and I wish you all a very, very good day. You're all unmuted. Okay. So we have a question here. How does vegetarian... So that's another big discussion for another time. In Torah, generally, there is a room for eating meat, so... But vegetarianism depends what reason and what cause and so on and so forth. We'll have to leave that for a different discussion. Okay, all unmuted. So have a wonderful day, everyone. And I see Joy's there. Welcome. Good to see you. Good to see that you're there. All the best, everyone.